Okay, this is got with me today Paul DiMartino, born at 74, former Australian rules footballer who represented the Western Bulldogs in the AFL. You're of Italian descent and son of a former fruiterer, Frank DiMartino, if I'm correct. Played for Richmond under 19 as a 16-year-old, drafted in the 91 draft, played reserves footy for them, and then never played for Richmond. Then you went to the VFA, played Sandringham, and then drafted by the Footscray Footy Club, later the Western Bulldogs. And the 95 pre-selection draft, you made your AFL debut late 95, and you were a high possession winner for the Bulldogs throughout your career, played 131 games for the Bulldogs until delisted at the end of 2003. Anything else I've missed out there? You're obviously running your own hotel, you're DiMartino Coffee. Where have we got here?
No, you pretty much got it all down pat, Chris.
Cool. Yeah. So they made the finals in 97 and 98, suspended in 97, injured, you said, in 98?
98, yep.
Yep. And then, it's good, we've got a music background track now. And then since you went on to play a premiership in Queensland, who was that for?
Once I finished up at the Western Bulldogs, I played 2 years at Southport in the Queensland League. My brother and I bought a couple of restaurants on the Gold Coast, and I wasn't going to play football, but they twisted my arm into playing at Southport. So I had two fabulous years there. The first year we lost the grand final, the next year we won, and I had a pretty decent game, and that was it. I hung the boots up after that.
That's right, went out on a high. Just going through, DiMartino Coffee started in 1954. That's your family, isn't it?
It is. Well, it was actually Mokopan Coffee. My grandfather was one of the founding members of Mokopan Coffee, which became a bit of an iconic Australian brand for a long time. Then family sold that in mid-1990s to a Japanese multinational, and unfortunately at Mokopan you don't see much anymore. So then one by one they started sacking all my cousins that were working. It was a real family-run business. They started sacking everyone there, Cerebos, and a few of my cousins went and started DiMartino Coffee, which has been, you know, running successfully now for, what are we, probably 25 years, maybe longer. Actually, 27 years, I think, this year. So, and a bit of an iconic brand as well now, and, you know, real sort of boutique, family-owned roaster.
Yeah. You're obviously, most Italians I've met are very family-orientated. It's very, I found a lot of times in COVID, restaurants and things, obviously, they got shut down and they couldn't be used. But they found a way to get around it by it. They still cooked food and then people came in, picked them up, or delivery started happening. And that's what I found, the Italians seem to be very quite resilient, really, by having they have a community, whereas a lot of Australians end up getting very isolated, not seeing their family, not seeing their parents and everything, because they don't live near each other, whereas Italians obviously pull together in that sort of a time. Did you guys do better or worse?
I mean, it was obviously a difficult time for everyone. I reckon it particularly impacted my father. He's a bit of a social butterfly and loves family and friends, and not being able to do the social things that we do, I think really affected. I think it affected, you know, well, definitely my family as well. You know, you're right. I think a lot of Mediterraneans, whether it's Greeks, Italians, Lebanese, a lot of Mediterraneans are definitely, you know, very family focused, and we are very, very tight. So my best mates are my brothers and my cousins, and, you know, we are really, really tight. So that was particularly difficult. I mean, we all found ways to sort of get through, and, you know, but to be, you know, have some dictator in our state sitting there telling you you're not allowed to go see anyone, you have to be not allowed 5 kilometres out of your, away from your house, you have to be in home by 8 o'clock at night, stupid rules that just, you know, I didn't sign up for that, and I don't think any of us did, and, you know, decisions got taken out of our own hands, which is wrong. We're not all a bunch of puppets. And I mean, there's some absolute morons out there, some of the lefties who just believe everything that Dan Andrews says is just, it really is jaw-dropping that people can't think for themselves and are willing to believe everything that comes out of some moron's mouth. So let's hope that we see the end of him in 4 weeks' time.
I think a lot of people sort of...
Excuse me.
You're right. I think a lot of people sort of went on a lot of blind faith, really, that there was health advice and that, you know, if it was released, people might have been able to go, you know what, fair enough or whatever. But the fact that he's actually declared it over and still won't even release some health advice is I think he's lost a lot of people there because a lot of people just believed him, and then and now there's still no proof.
He's very secretive, very corrupt, as we know, and it's nothing was ever about us. It was all about him, and people have just got to wake up to that and realise that he's an absolute creep of a human being. There's no other nice way to put it, and I'm not going to beat around the bush, and I can't wait till I run into him one day and just let him know in no uncertain terms what sort of corrupt human being he is with a low moral compass.
I think you'll find you probably won't be able to see him on the streets. He never goes out anymore.
No.
But, I mean, that's realistically, that's probably the sign that he probably needs to take on board, that he can't even cruise around in his own suburb without, you know, he doesn't want to be seen. He's got his billboards and stuff out now that have his name really small. They don't have his face on it. You know, I mean, Albanese came down. He was very hesitant to be seen with him because of, obviously, the impact that he's been having here. Getting back to, so, I mean, family and business seems to be pretty hand in hand for you among, and like other mates of mine who have got restaurants out in Preston and stuff as well. They, family and like they work together with the restaurants. The bars work together. They get their coffee from other people, and it all seems to be it's family first, business second sort of thing. Whereas the government now seems to have said that a business is just an entity on its own. It's not actually a family. What sort of issues did you run into with, because you have people as well, like backpackers and stuff that came past that would have had no access to government help?
Yeah, there was a fair few staff of ours that weren't able to access JobKeeper or whatever else was available. So we did everything in our power to keep them employed, gainfully employed through COVID. And, you know, we did a lot of work at the pub ourselves, whether it was painting, cleaning, just tried to tidy it up for when we did get the chance to reopen. You know, there was a few times some of them didn't have enough money to pay rent, whatever it may have been. I was, you know, helping feed them and also giving them money as they needed just to get through. So, you know, I think that loyalty that I've had towards my staff's gone a long way. We've got close to 50 staff here at Lamaro's now, and, you know, I think there's a real staff crisis out there, but we don't have one here. I guess that's just part of a bit of the legacy of us putting the time and effort in with them through COVID, that we also got a good reputation amongst some of the travelling community, that if you want to work somewhere that cares and looks after you, then we're the place to work at. So it's been, you know, it's worked out. It's been really beneficial for us. But, you know, as I said, it was just a tough time, and seeing the way they were struggling, just, you know, that younger generation that they thrive on socialising, and, you know, to have 2 years taken away from you where, you know, like my son who's just turned 19 now, you know, year 11 and year 12 where you couldn't barely leave the house, they missed out on all their 18th birthday parties, they missed out on a lot of special moments that you have when you go through, you know, high school, and especially year 12. So it was just a brutal time on a lot of people. So that's just, hopefully we never ever have to go through anything like that again. I just, you know, I can't believe I saw someone the other day that said they absolutely loved lockdown. I looked at them, I thought, wow, you've got some serious issues in life if you love being locked away in your own house for 2 years. So, you know, I know we're all different, each to their own, and if that floated some people's boat, and working from home, if that's your thing, then that's fine. So not for me, but, you know, family and food and all the staff here at the pub now, they, you know, I consider them part of our family. Once you work with us, you're in our inner sanctum, and, you know, I care for you like you're mine.
So since the lockdowns have been over, when you started your business, it was just before COVID, wasn't it?
I've been here at Lamaro's 5 years. So, yeah, it was only a couple of years before COVID when we took over here. And we were just, yeah, we built a really great little business. And I think it's no doubt prospered post-COVID, the fact that we do have enough staff to open 7 days a week. And there's probably been a lot of great community support. We're really big, and I'm very active here in the local community. We sponsor the local footy clubs, soccer clubs, basketball. We're sponsoring the Middle Park Primary, the South Melbourne Park Primary School, a lot of the primary schools, any charity that I can get involved in, we do. I think it's really important. I think, you know, the pubs in the area, they're always at the, you know, your pub is your hub and your local community hub, and that's what we pride ourselves on here. So, you know, we have built a really great rapport with the local community, and, you know, it's always you give back, and I suppose they give to you and you try to give back. It's the way it should work, the circle of, you know, way of building a really great little hospitality business, I believe.
Yeah, I used to play for Canterbury Footy Club, and we were sponsored by the Harp, and every Wednesday was Palmer night over at the Harp, and then we had the G-Bung, so we'd be down at the G-Bung every Sunday, and down at the Polo Club down there. Yeah, like, I mean, they sponsor you, but generally when we went to the pub, I dare say we gave them more than they gave us in the end. But you know, like, it's a place to go, and community and sport has really been a thing that I find is great for people to get out and meet each other a lot. A lot of people don't like going for a jog. They don't want to do this, don't want to do that, but they'll run around after a footy and do, you know, it's a good way to get out and do cardio without having to actually do cardio. Like, you're sort of tricking yourself into doing it, but you also then bump into and have a group of, you know, like 18 mates in each side, and which could grow up to the, you know, and now that a lot of footy clubs are mixing netball and having girls footy teams, and like they're just growing now, and they're going from strength to strength. So,
oh, absolutely, it's great. I mean, there's nothing like playing team sport, being in that team environment, that atmosphere, where nothing greater than winning a sport or a game, and you know, you get to celebrate with, you know, the friends and your teammates that, you know, that did it with you. So that's one great thing about team sport, and the camaraderie it builds and the friendships you get out of it.
Well, the other thing I find is it teaches you about winning and losing, and also being able to lean on other people. Look, if you're having a bad game because you're having a bad day or whatever, like, your mates will get around you and help you out with that. Whereas the isolation of the last 2 years has just been going against that. So anybody that went to, some people used to go to gym to take out frustration. Some people go and play, you know, they play sport to, you know, they play contact sport, and it means that they're far less aggressive in the rest of their life if they've got issues that way. Or it's just, there's so much stuff in sport that I find it bizarre that we just got rid of it, especially considering it was in everyone's best interest to be fit and healthy. So for health advice, to tell you to stay at home, stay out of the sun, to not be running around and playing sport and doing all that sort of stuff again, is just, I'm very surprised. And I get that AFRA told doctors they can't say things, so you couldn't get a second opinion anyway, but again, that's another government overreach that doesn't need to be involved.
Tell me about it. Vitamin D is essential, isn't it, when you're not allowed out of your house or get outside in the open fresh air, gobsmacking.
Well, I remember when they had normal advice, which came out in probably April 2020, I would have thought, where they said, go outside, get some sun, clean your hands, make sure you stay fit and healthy, eat well, get a lot of exercise. The fitter you are, the better you'll be for this. And then at some point, it just changed and went.
Yep, the narrative did change, didn't it? And then that was right. We were to protect the elderly initially, and people like myself who were autoimmune compromised and people who were health compromised. But then, you know, that went out the window very quickly. So anyway... And there's more now than ever, and more deaths than ever, but that doesn't get reported anymore, does it?
No, there's also obviously the vaccine injured that are getting looked at from in the UK and stuff, which I'm sure will filter to America and everywhere else as well. I was also trying to work out, like, I was looking at it and going, which 2 years of your life would you be more, like, which 2 years of your life are you happy to lose? You know, like, I was just thinking 18, 19, 20, it's such a massive part of your life. And when I was a copper, like, I was bumping into people who were 16, 17, about to finish high school, and one of their mates would be 18, and they'd just drive and park in a car park, and then they'd see a cop car coming, and they'd just burst into tears because they were thinking, we're going to give them a $10,000 fine or whatever it was going to be. They were all going to get in trouble. Half of them had left because their parents were fighting, because they'd been in the same house the whole time. And there's just all these repercussions that don't seem to affect a lot of people, that they don't care when it affects other people. And I was just trying to work out, like, if you were 78 and 80, would you be like, I can throw them away? Or are you more desperate because you're like, these are the last ones you've got? Which is, I can't find a good 2 years. I mean, maybe 2 and 3. I could probably lose them, and my parents would probably be happy with me losing them, the terrible twos as well. But I just can't think of a 2 years that's better than any others. But I can see some that would be worse, maybe. And just all the kids that have... We're trying to do year 11 and 12. They were two great years for me. Like, I was terrible at school, but great social time. And it's just, they couldn't go to school. They couldn't do this, and I just can't get over it. And then, like, you having backpackers here, like, imagine coming to Australia thinking you travel, you're going to work, you do whatever, and then you, not only can you not travel anymore, you're also locked down, you can't get paid, you can't work to pay, like, and then you can't get home anyway. It's just, I couldn't imagine.
I think the worst, for me, the worst thing that I heard come out of Dan Andrews' mouth was one of his press conference when he said, if your neighbour's doing something wrong, dob them in. That is the most un-Australian thing I've ever heard. The great Australian spirit is the camaraderie, mateship, friendship, and to have some moron like him telling you to dob your neighbour in, it's just, I couldn't believe those words come out of his mouth. Like, that's just you know, you've got to love thy neighbour. Your neighbour's there to be part, you know, friends, and not to sit there and dob them in if someone's come over to visit them. I couldn't fathom even the words coming out of his mouth. Let's just hope they all come back to bite him on the backside in a few weeks' time.
With the dobbing on your neighbour, it was interesting too, because you've got like share houses and stuff where there's sometimes like 12 people in a house. Yeah, they're all sharing that house together, and then because they're not working anymore, now they're all there, and we're getting all these phone calls saying there's three people over there, and you're like, how do you know if there's not three people living there? Yeah. And they're like, well, I've never seen that before. I'm like, do you think maybe that's because no one's working anymore? You know, they're like, I don't care, go over there and tell them to turn it off. Or people will be having a party in their house. Like, if there's a share house and there's 12 of them there, they're entitled to have a party. They're all living there. And then they'd have a party, and obviously everyone else was upset about that. It's like, stop being upset at your neighbour. Be upset at the people who put the rules in place.
Yeah.
And that was another thing as the cops. It's like, if the cops didn't do what the government said, now we're picking and choosing what it is. The voters are the only ones that can change that. So, like, I get that there was a lot of times where police looked like they were heavy-handed and whatever, and that needs to be investigated. I'm not arguing that. But to hold – the police get used by Dan for security and to enforce rules that he just made up on the fly – and then the police end up wearing it because they're just a uniform. They're not people. They don't realise that those people also have mortgages. They have, you know, lives. They have young kids. They have mouths to feed and stuff. And it's just everybody can have a go at a uniform because you're not a person anymore. And it's like, don't take it out on the police. Take it out on the people who made them those rules to enforce. And I know it's going to take a lot for people to come to the middle and accept what they've seen. Like, some people have been sprayed, some people have been hit with pepper ball, some people have, you know, copped batting rounds and stuff. And I understand that at no point are they probably going to really trust the police anymore. But to fix this situation, we're not going to do it by sitting here and hating the other team when both of us are on different sides of a line that has been drawn by somebody else. And he's made that line. It could have disappeared at any point. He could have changed his mind. Like, he's not following the health advice anymore. Like, he didn't need to do that for 2 years then, obviously. So he's picking and choosing it. So I'd rather people try and, like, target that towards the government rather than people. Like, you've got cops that live in your street. They know that what you went through. They had it. Don't get me wrong, police had a better right. Like, I live in Lara, and I was driving to and from Melbourne every day. And so even just that, being able to work in the city, like, I couldn't imagine. Yeah, I was just outside the lockdowns. So by the time I got home, I can go see a movie. And you guys are sitting in here with 5Ks. And then I spoke to one guy who was down at Elwood, I think. And I was like, oh, you would have a suite because you're on a beach. And he goes, well, yes and no. He goes, I live on the actual water. He goes, oh, I've actually only got 2.5Ks I can go. You know, because he didn't get 5K from the beach out. Yeah, so he actually had a tiny amount of, you know, he couldn't even run 5K if he wanted to because he's got to run 14 laps of his own area. Yeah, it's just beyond me how we've got to where we are. Now that the lockdowns are over, though, like, what's on for you with Lamara's now? Are you expanding? Are you?
We just bought the Yark Hotel. Jeff Lindsay, my business partner here, and myself, the Yark Hotel, which is just outside of Yay. So that's just opened, which we're really excited about and proud about. And, you know, we do a little country pub, a little venture up there. Yeah, there's a few other little irons in the fire that we're looking at down here for a little bit more expansion. So we've got such a great staff and team here that there's a fair few of the team are ready to for management roles and to expand a little bit. So we're definitely hunting around to grow, you know, our little maybe start a little empire. We'll see what happens. But, you know, hospitality's always been in my blood from, you know, the family. I studied hospitality at William Angus when I finished school, and I really do enjoy the industry. It's a great social environment. It's great fun. It is hard work, and it's, you know, I put in long hours, but it's I never feel like I'm coming to work. It's just, it's not a chore to get out of bed and come here to Lamara's every day. It's just great fun.
I've noticed that about a lot of hospitality people. Like, they might be doing 12 plus hour days, but they're coming in and they're eating with their workers, but it's realistically, it's a family, you know, like, and then they socialise afterwards, have a few drinks here and do whatever. Like, you work, eat, play at your workplace when you're in hospitality. And if you can expand that and go elsewhere, when you say yay, is there any reason why you've gone all the way out, or did you literally look at the bat?
It was just, the opportunity came up, and we liked the look of the pub, and we loved the I mean, Yark itself doesn't have much of a population, but there's a few surrounding areas. Yay's not far. You've got Acheron. There's Alexandra. Bonnie Doon's down the road. So there's, it's a nice little thoroughfare on the way through. So we just, we love the look of the pub, and we, you know, we got, we bought the 2 acres it sits on as well. So we'll develop those into either some sort of boutique accommodation. We'll definitely do something down there. But it was just, we thought it was a great opportunity, and the time was right for a little country pub to our resumes.
Was it, did you look at the Ring of Steel and then just go, I'll look at pubs outside of that?
Yeah, I don't know how it all eventuated, but we just, when we got a chance to get back on the road after COVID, and we found this, and that sort of, yeah, definitely tickled the fancy. At least we've got somewhere to go if we ever get locked away again.
I actually been looking at a bunch of pubs as well. I don't have the backing to start it or the education to do it, but there's some tiny little pubs that are probably about 2.5-3 hours out west, out of Melbourne. And they've got a lot of history behind them, and it's just one person. Half the time, it's only open 3 days a week.
Yeah.
But it's
not easy, especially rurally, trying to find the staff at the moment. No doubt, up there, there's a lot of other. You know, that you look at the fruit pickers at the moment. I know that some of the friends of mine who got apple orchards, or the ones who got cherry farms, they're really struggling to find fruit pickers, and that was always the transient. And sort of holiday working visa workforce that would go and work in those and do that over summer or whenever it may be. So, you know, I know a lot of them are struggling at the moment. You hear people having to throw fruit away because they just don't have enough people to pick it for them, which is really sad.
Yeah, I've had a few farmers saying the same thing to me. When I've been cruising around, they were saying they don't have the temporary migrants that are coming over, and the visas are getting taken away because people are saying they're taking our jobs. But at the same time, people don't want to go do that job. So it's, you know, like we need to work out, why do people not want to leave a city and go out there? Is it because they get given everything in the city? Maybe. Like, I find it seems to be now that if you're happy to put in more work, there's actually, you can be a lot more successful now than there ever was, because there's so many people now that don't want to work.
Lazy. And I think 2 years of government handouts has made some people even lazier. Just think, how easy is this? How good is this? I can't fathom it. I can't fathom how some people can think like that, but you know, some of these socialists do.
Yeah, it's an interesting like concept where the more welfare you get out, the more you are dependent on the government, and it's a personal responsibility thing where if you don't want to work and the government keeps giving you money, then you're more reliant on the government each time, which means they have more power over you. But if you're happy with that because you don't have to make your own decisions anymore, then it's so it sort of just seems to be a spiral where
100% absolutely, yep. Couldn't agree more with you.
Obviously, the more you get into stuff, and the more, a lot of people I know have never got into politics because it never affected them. And I think the last 2 years has sort of really shown people. I mean, their beers went from $3 when they started to $12 each now, and you know, if people don't realise how much excise is put on that and how much that goes to the government, and same yep. as your fuel, how much that's excise. But people just don't seem to...
We're actually over-governed. We have too many, especially here in Victoria, there's too many public servants. There's too many people on the payroll. I think what Stan got, is it 100 people working in his own social media department? Something ridiculous. Like, that's our taxpayer money going there. It's just wrong. If we could cut a lot of that out, then... you know, I think we'd see more benefit for our taxes. We're just, it's gobsmacking and jaw dropping that we're overtaxed, but that's where it all goes, to the public servants, that workforce that I think probably tripled under Dan.
Well, a lot of with police, they're leaving at 2 to 1, and then your teachers seem to be the same. I went to a teachers union event last night, and they were saying the same thing. The retention is terrible at the moment. No one wants to go there anymore, just due to the government sending, like, there's so many requirements that they have to make that they're not just teaching kids anymore. They're teaching kids, and then they have to then tick off all these government oversight committees. And I get we want to be teaching kids stuff, but if the teachers aren't able to actually teach kids anymore because they're too busy doing admin to try and meet bureaucrats that have just been given a job, which are getting paid good money as well, it's like you could actually get 5 more teachers instead of having those people coming out to do. And you'd actually have a teacher-student relationship that was better than we were before. But there seems to be... And another thing I don't understand is, I think it's because you've got departments and they don't seem to speak to each other. So the education minister won't speak to the jobs minister, and then the regional people don't speak to either of those two. So they try and fix their problems on their own, Whereas if you're looking at trying to increase jobs and you're like, well, the roads are crappy, and you're like, okay, well, if you fix the roads, that's employment for those people, and then housing is unaffordable. Well, if you've got jobs for people to do out west, those houses are cheaper, they can live there cheaper, and then more people will go there, which means more jobs, which means hospitality, which means everything else. But they don't talk to each other. You know, then you've got more teachers, you're like, we can't get teachers out here, and you're like, because they don't want to go out there. But, you know,
it's a snowballing effect, isn't it?
And it's a holistic way we need to look at it. But everything's so segregated, and then like Dan having 70, six, whatever it is, 100 staffers of his own, what's his cabinet for? Like, what do they do? Like, I thought they were supposed to work for him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think it's definitely politics has affected our life more than ever. And I mean, even I was contemplating going in for this election, but not to be now. And maybe in the future I'll look at it. I was sort of helped found the Victorians Party, which is now floundered, and few little issues there, unfortunately, but it's just Dan and his Labor Party can find anything, any corruption or anything or whatever they think, they'll bring others down, and they haven't been brought down themselves. But it's really difficult, the political landscape now, with the donations, which you know, unions can just keep funding the Labor Party ridiculously with their donations, yet everyone else, you're limited to $4,000 over 4 years. It's really shuts down a lot of the minor parties or anyone else trying to get in. You know, we're a little bit beholden, and the unions, it's jaw-dropping at times what they do and what they can get away with. But anyway, I get, you know, you want to look after workers. I'm all for that. There's nothing, you know, you want people to get paid what's right and not be ripped off or anything like that. But I think some people who are union members, if they actually had a look at what their big wigs in the unions, what they're earning and what they're, I think they'd be a bit gobsmacked as to where their union dues actually go and the lifestyle it's funding. You know, you see, you know, the champagne socialists, some of them, that's for sure. They're drinking the finest wine when they go out. They're taking themselves to the most expensive restaurants, and it's all on the members' dues.
Well, even was it CFMEU? I think we're putting in like 900,000 or something last year. Yes. Or in the 2018 report, I was saying, and it's like, if you realise how much money you're paying on your membership fees, and then to be throwing a million over to Labor, and then for them to come out and tell you to vote Labor, it's a weird sort of environment, really.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't get into politics this time around?
Too much stuff on. Kids are still a bit too young. Maybe in the future. It's something I haven't ruled out yet. I've never had a life goal to be a politician, but when you see some of the things that are going on, and you know, you can't just keep sitting here and whinging probably like yourself now that you're going to throw yourself into politics, you may as well get in there and have a go yourself. So it's something I haven't, you know, ruled out completely, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a loop I need to close out. Like, I've just found myself complaining more and more and then going, why doesn't someone do something? And then you're like, that's why, because I'm just sitting here going, why isn't somebody doing it and everybody's doing the same thing?
Yep.
So, I mean, if you can put your hand up and people can get behind you, then at least it's something you can say that you tried to do, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Exactly.
With the donations as well, like, people don't realise it's not just Labor. Like, Labor and Liberal have both agreed that basically nobody else can get any money. So there's the Cormac Foundation, which Liberals get money from, and they can get as much money as they want through that.
Yep.
And then obviously the Labor Party have the Trades Hall. So anybody else just can't get any sort of money. So like, if Gina Reinhart wanted to turn around and give me $20 million, she can't do it.
No, 100%. Even Palmer's having with the United Party here for this current upcoming state election, he can't donate any money. So it's very limited, very limiting as to what can go on. But let's just hope that good should always prevail over evil, and we know that person in charge at the moment is evil, pure evil. So let's just hope everyone can see that. And as I always say, you know, good prevails over evil. Don't forget that.
There are a lot of people working behind the scenes as well. Like, it's they just need support, that's all. I'll get back to footy. Post-footy, did you have any issues with, you know, like identity crisis and that sort of thing when you got out?
Yeah, it's not easy. You get out there and you're playing in front of, you know, big crowds every week, and there's the adrenaline rush, and there's probably the bit of the notoriety. You definitely, I missed part of that. I missed game day, no doubt. And you do, you sort of, there's definitely something that dies with you when your career finishes. And I transitioned pretty well. I had business. I already had, you know, and then my son was born the same time. So, you know, family became a new focus. I was really focused on my business, but I did struggle. I don't think I went back to an AFL game for maybe 2 or 3 years because I just couldn't handle going there and not being out and playing myself. So I just chose to keep away from it. I'm starting to go a lot more now. My kids love going to the game, so we go a fair bit as a family. But I definitely, yeah, definitely something dies with you. And I can see how a lot of guys go through some real mental health issues post-football. And it's just, it's not that easy transitioning at times. I know people think you've got to grow up and get on with life, but you try. It's a big adjustment, especially when, you know, with all the, you've got so many, you know, great things around you at a football club and a lot of protective mechanisms and just the discipline that comes with it. It's great. And some people, you can see how they fall off the rails when those disciplines are taken away from them post-football.
Are footy clubs doing a lot more now than they were in the first place? Look, it seems to be that they're
100%. They've got a lot better, definitely. You know, you're not just, once you're out the door, you're done and dusted. They do, there is, you know, procedures in place now, and the AFL Players Association's got a lot better in that regard too. So there's a lot of things you can access and a lot of support networks around you, which is fabulous.
Was there, when you started out, what sort of, the older boys, when they would have left when you started, were they just, you just out on your own, or like how did it used to be?
Yeah, pretty much. Once you finish, you're out on your own. There was, I mean, when I finished, there was, they were just starting to have welfare officers and things like that to help you transition. So, yeah, but I think, you know, prior to that, yeah, once you were done, and it was just, there's the door, see you later. And, you know, thanks for 10 or 12 years, but then there'd be no follow-up, no check-ins to see how you're going or anything like that. It was just, you're gone. It was a pretty brutal way of exiting.
Do they have past players days and stuff like that?
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, a lot of them, and I'm starting to attend a lot more of that as well. Yeah, it's I think most clubs, and especially the Bulldogs, have got a lot better in that regard too. And there's a real active past players association. A lot of lunches now, get-togethers at every game. So it's good to go back and catch up with mates that you went out and to battle with for so many years.
Do you have any tips for any young footy players that are thinking about getting in? Like, I mean, it's such a temperamental thing, isn't it? Like, because you can get injured and you can be out at any point. But if you're thinking about it that way, are you sort of half one foot in, one foot out? Like, you need to be on your game, obviously.
You've just got to be all in mentally, physically, emotionally. It's brutal. It's a brutal game, and only the tough survive. And I think the game's just got tougher and tougher. There's, you know, people used to think the game was tough, but King hitting someone is not tough. The way they attack the football now, and, you know, some of the guys run back with the flight of the football, it's just, you know, there's nowhere to hide out there. And, you know, with so many cameras and so much media exposure now, you can't afford to take a backward step. So they're, you know, they've got balls of steel, the boys that are out there and the girls that are playing. It's, you know, it's great to see the evolution of the female game as well. And I know my daughters enjoy playing footy and they love going to watch AFL, AFLW, they get along as often as they can. But it's, I suppose, you know, you just got to, you want to make it to the top, you got to be mentally, physically, emotionally prepared, and you got to put everything into it. It's, you know, and your body is your temple, that's for sure. So you got to put fuel it the correct way and look after it as best you can.
So the having a beer and a dart in the shower after the game's not the way to go anymore?
No, not anymore, no.
I remember when I was playing with the, I did a couple of cameos when I was late 30s, which isn't all that long ago, just in case you're wondering. And then afterwards, they're all having up and goes and power raids and doing whatever. They're all in the ice baths and doing whatever. And then I went and played Masters, and the blokes are all doing the same thing. They're back in the shower, having a dart, having a beer, just doing whatever. Yeah. And it's just funny that recovery is obviously more important for older blokes than it is for the younger ones. But the younger ones seem to know what's going on, and the older ones are just still playing the old chestnut.
That's it. Well, I think beer used to wash away the pain.
Did you do you miss the old style though, where it seemed to be a lot more position based back there? Like, you had full forwards like Tony Lockett and then Mick Martin, you know, having battles and that sort of thing. Or do you like the more?
I was fortunate enough to play against, you know, Gary Ablett Senior, Tony Lockett, Jason Dunstall, Wayne Carey, you know, the some superstar power forwards. I think it's, yeah, I'd love to see someone kick 100 goals again, but I suppose now it's all this team first mentality, and you know, the true, your forwards aren't just true forwards anymore. They've got to adapt to everyone has to attack and defend. It was probably, you know, I remember one of my coaches used to say, when you know, you'd look at the stat sheet and you might have had eight tackles, well, you had eight tackles because you were second to the footy. Now it's not necessarily the case, you know, that, that, and the pressure of the game is phenomenal, and that's something that I do sort of look and think, I can't believe, you know, some of their defensive pressure these days is fabulous, and something we probably never really worked on as much as what they do now.
I was wondering how do you reckon like Tony and Wayne and stuff would go now? Look, obviously in their prime, not at their age at the moment.
I reckon you adapt to any era, so I think the best of the best are always going to be the best of the best at any era. It doesn't matter whether you played 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever generation you went through. I think they all, you just, the best, the cream always rises to the top.
You reckon they'd still get 100?
Hard to say. I reckon, Plugger, he was brutal. Who knows?
There's not too many people I reckon that still stand in front of Plugger.
I didn't want to do it. No way.
Cool. I was just wondering, anything else that you want to bring up? Obviously, politics is probably not on for you at this moment.
No.
Don't want to get into Vic Party and what happened. Is it purely just donations and stuff that got on there? Is it Labor coming after you?
I'm not sure exactly what happened in the end, but it's a bit sad that it didn't unfold like the way it was meant to. But I think we pretty much covered all bases, and been good talking to you.
Cool. All right, well, thank you very much for your time, Dimmer, and I'll let you get back to it. There's obviously 1,000 people running around setting up things in the background.
Yeah, busy day today. Friday's crazy down here, so the long lunch is not dead at Lamaro's, which is fabulous.
All right, well, all the best, all right, mate. Thanks very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Chris.